So if we have any new friends joining us for the very first time, you participate in the Q&A session by raising your hands or sending your questions anonymously. So Bente, we have one question that we didn't get to last week, and then also there was a pre-submitted question.
Yeah.
So yes. One of the questions says, hi Jennifer, this is just an observation. I just want to comment only. When I was coloring my hair, my eye became more and more. I tried to show the world that my hair is white. I'm going with natural, I'm perfect, so on. But later I stopped and started to color my hair. Then that eye not come with me. I'm so relaxed that I was not coloring. So I guess, Dante, if you have any additional comments?
Actually, Jennifer, I didn't get the question. So she's coloring her hair, is it?
Yes. And so while coloring her hair, she observed that the eye became stronger and stronger.
I in the sense capital I. I is the capital I?
Yes, that's correct.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. And then there's thoughts of my hair, I'm perfect, etc. All of the eye. And then after she stopped coloring her hair, then she felt like the eye was not, she used the word not with me. I'm so relaxed then when I was, I'm so relaxed when I am not coloring.
Okay, interesting question. So basically, we want to show off. We want to highlight ourselves. We always want to become a special person, a VIP. So that may basically enhance our self-view, enhance our eye-making, mind-making, conceit. So basically, these activities helps to build a self, help to strengthen this acquired self. But on the other hand, if we are living a quite humble lifestyle, being quite innocent, with, of course, with wisdom and knowing how eye making, mind making, conceit happens. So that actually help us to abandon all these wrong notions and basically to have a quite peaceful mind. Because whenever self view is available, you can't have that without grasping. That is a very interesting point. Highlighted by Venerable Punnamantani Putta to Venerable Ananda. So he mentioned, so you can't have the personality view, I view, myself without any grasping. Grasping is a kind of a prerequisite for you to have the I, myself, mine. Whenever grasping is there, definitely you are undergoing some sort of suffering. Kind of a frustration, kind of a, say, unfulfilled mental state. So you have something missing, a little bit of frustration. So these are the kind of suffering we are experiencing whenever I is available, whenever myself is available. Whenever I am available, I might feel that I am not a perfect person. I still have this to do. I still have that to do. I have done all these wrong things. Or else you may feel frustrated. I want to do that. I want to do this. I couldn't do that. What would be my future? What would going to happen in the future? So all the frustrations. Whenever a self is available, whenever I is available, whenever myself is available. But on the other hand, when you are disclaiming it, when you are trying to abandon it, so then basically you don't have that frustration. You are simply living in the present moment. Mind is quite relaxed. There is no eye-making, mind-making or conceit. Rather, mind is in a non-grasping state. So therefore, you may feel relaxed. So what you are telling is true. So we can recognize how I am making a self. What are the supporting activities I am following to create a self, to highlight myself. Actually, that doesn't mean that I want to become a bigger and I want to become a kind of a timid person so that everybody may go on me. It doesn't. That is not the approach. Rather, we may use the terminology, we may play the role, we may play the role of our, say, job as a mother, as a father, as an administrator, like we discussed last time. We may play the role. But as Buddha mentioned, without misapprehending, without grasping it, but knowing the true purpose, knowing the value of it, knowing that these are merely designations, these are merely expressions, these are merely words, statements. So therefore, I like to highlight in that way, answer you in that way.
Thank you, Shankar. And the next question that I received is quite long, so please bear with me. Respected Bhante, with permission regarding jhana, I'd like to present some questions and reflections. First question, there's speech of samatha jhana versus vipassana jhana. Where can this distinction be found in the sutta? Where is it mentioned that there are these two types of jhana? And then second question, sorry Bhante, the request was for me to finish reading everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then if Bhante needs to repeat the question, I can.
Right.
So the second question is, where in the sutta can I find the information that one has to come out of jhana in order to be able to develop insight through the jhanic experience? If my sources are correct, some people, including respected Bhante, Hinatola Gunaratna, came to the conclusion that there are no such evidences in the suttas. Furthermore, they argue that if an absorption is so deep that insight is not possible while in the absorption, then it is precisely not the kind of jhana which the Buddha taught. Therefore, it shouldn't even be called samatha jhana, but simply Nicha Samadhi, wrong concentration. For me, this makes much sense. It fits with my meditation experience so far, and it is in line with the Buddha's principle to teach only what leads to awakening. Generally, the Buddha doesn't encourage to doze off into states where the development of wisdom is not possible. Of course, if it nonetheless happens, one can reflect upon it afterwards. But this doesn't imply that this is the kind of absorption which the Buddha meant and taught. Please, respected Bhante, I'd appreciate your answers and some comments on this topic with much gratitude and respectful greeting. Bhante, would you like me to repeat the first question?
Okay. Sure. Yes, please. Yeah, actually, so you have put it in the chat. That's a speech of samatha jhana versus vipassana jhana. Where can this distinction be found in the sutta? Actually, we can say like this. Say, typically, there's a convention is first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana. So those are considered as the four material jhana or rupa jhana. And then there are the formless jhana, four formless jhana. Akasananchayatana, Vinyananchayatana, Akinchanyayatana, Nevasanya, Nasanyayatana. Now, these eight jhanas, one can typically say, are the samatha jhana. On the other hand, there are certain others, like say, signless concentration, desireless concentration, emptiness concentration, say fruition concentrations, and all sort of different kinds of other things are there, then that we can probably say are the vipassana jhana. So I can't say exactly a particular sutta which simply lists down all these things, okay, these are the samatha and these are the vipassana. Probably just by reflection that the how one may achieve it may probably is the cause how people have categorized them. Say, for example, assume that you are in the Anapanasati and you are simply observing the anapana sign, the what you call the counterpart sign, and then the nimitta, and again and again you are applying your mind there, and ultimately your mind get trained there, your mind get absorbed there. And then, I mean, the wisdom part is not there yet. I mean, kind of reflection, kind of a wisdom, seeing that this is impermanent, unsatisfactory, non-self, so such kind of an approach is not there. It is absent. Rather, the concentration is more prominent, and as a result of that, mind is very much like locked there. So that is where the mind is absorbed, mind is locked, mind is confirmed, permanent in the sense I mean firm. And so we can say it's a samatha approach, it's a samatha jhana. But on the other hand, say you are practicing vipassana. Say you already have some build-up concentration, it may be a samatha concentration, and with which you are observing various phenomena, maybe bodily phenomena, maybe various feelings, maybe various mental states, thoughts. And because of this observation, you may understand their impermanent nature, how transient they are, how quick, inconstant they are. Now, this is a vipassana approach that we are talking. So, you understand their reality. As a result of that, you may come to a state, I am just giving a single scenario here, explaining a scenario here. Say, as a result of this, your observation, more and more you understand the impermanent nature, and then you probably might not be able to recognize various signs. Now, if you want to recognize a sign, that means you need to have a perception of permanence. But now, things are extremely fragile, transient, so you can't hold a sign, you can't perceive a sign, because things are rapidly changing. Now mind become incapable of acquiring signs, remembering signs, storing, registering signs. As a result of that, mind becomes signless. Mind simply relinquish everything. And it becomes signless. Now when you develop this state, so you can sort of experience what we call as the animitta samadhi, called the signless concentration. So, since this signless concentration is based on a path, a practice, which is more towards the vipassana, so we can reasonably say, so what we experience right now is a vipassana concentration. But on the other hand, you can refer one book in this life itself, written by Sayadaw Upandita, where he mentioned more in this vipassana jhana. He actually not only the animitta, appanihita, sunyata, he consider vipassana jhana even before that. Say for example, you are observing various phenomena. Say for example, you are doing vedana anupassana. Various feelings are there. Again and again, you are applying your mind to different feelings. Now the applied thought is there and you observe them carefully. The sustained thought, vichara, is there. And assume that you are quite successful as a result of fair amount of piti is also there, rapcha is also there. Then comfortable is you are, because you now you are successful, so you are quite comfortable, happy, and mind is concentrated instantaneously to each and every feeling. So there are certain jhana factors, what we talk in the first jhana, is available. But the concentration is momentary concentration. It's not a single object that we are trying to keep and perceive this as a permanent thing. Rather, it's a natural, realistic phenomena, which is again and again arising and passing away. But we are able to maintain our concentration again and again onto that impermanent phenomena. But the jhana factors are very much available. So therefore he defines, okay, this is similar to first jhana, what we experience in the samatha practice, but this is a vipassana approach. Therefore, we can say this is a vipassana jhana. So likewise, he argues that the vipassana jhanas are available and nobody actually has refuted it. It's very much like kind of a understood and another way of interpretation during vipassana. One may experience some amount of jhanic experience because those jhana factors are still present in the jhana in the vipassana as well. Now, therefore, this is the answer that I like to give on the first question, where you can come across vipassana jhana as well as the samatha jhana. Can you explain the second one, Jennifer?
Yes, Sensei. The second one says, where in the sutra can I find the information that one has to come out of jhana in order to be able to develop insight to the jhana experience?
Yeah. So actually, I have received this question before. So I like to, I found a few suttas. Now one sutta is called Attaka Nagara Sutta, where Venerable Ananda explains several experiences of jhana. Now he mentioned that assume that someone is achieving the first jhana, or someone is achieving even the second, third, fourth, and he may even expand it to the level of the cheto vimutti, the freedom of mind. And after achieved that, he made a kind of a radical reflection. So iti pati sanchikkati ayampiko metta cheto vimutti abhisankata abhisam chetaita. Yankopana kinchi abhisankatam abhisanchetaitam tam aniccham nirodha dhammanti pajanati. Now this is the radical reflection. Like if you can remember when we are explaining Pottapada Sutta, so when someone reached the summit of perception, so he made a radical reflection. I should not further make any effort to arouse a new perception. Rather, I should make no intention at all. I should abandon all the intentions, volitions, and let the present perception also fade away. Then only he is able to touch the cessation, touch the nirodha. So similarly here also, one has achieved the jhana, and being there, now he makes a reflection. Now actually when you are doing the reflection, you can't say you are in the jhanic experience. Rather, you make a radical reflection about the jhanic experience. You step back and make a reflection. Now, as we do in Satipatthana, so we have a kind of a radical reflection, kind of a parato perception. So you go out of the experience, you come out of the experience, you step back, and then you do the reflection. So this is a very interesting point, because while you are fully absorbed in the experience, you are there. I mean, you have no other perception at all. You are completely absorbed in the experience. You are completely locked in the experience, bounded by the experience. But on the other hand, when you are making a reflection, that means you are able to separate from the experience. You are out of the experience. And now you are recognizing the disadvantages of the existing experience. So this is the reflection. So this is impermanent. This is mind-made or made out of effort. Abhisanchetaitam. Abhisankatam. Abhisanchetaitam. Abhisankatam means this is a constructed state. I did a lot of preparations to arouse this state. Abhisanchetaitam. I made a volitional activity to prepare this state. So he recognized all these preparations he made in order to accomplish the jhana. Now he is not in the jhana but has come out of it, taken the back seat, and now he is reflecting. Make a kind of a very realistic decision. Tang anicchang, tad nicchang. So this is also impermanent. Nirodha dhammang. So therefore this is also passing away. So this radical reflection is the vipassana he is doing. So that is not within or not being in the experience, but coming out of the experience. While being out of the experience, you make this radical reflection. So that is why we typically say, so while being in the jhana, you can't make vipassana. Rather, you need to come out of jhana, step back, look at it objectively, then make the radical reflection. And another sutta is what we call Dutiya Puggala Sutta, coming in the Anguttara Nikaya Chatukka Nipata. So where Buddha mentioned, say, when one is in the first jhana, so here pataman jhanam upasampajya viharati, so yadeva tatta hoti rupagatam, vedanagatam, sanyagatam, sankharagatam, vinyanagatam, te dhamme anicchato, dukkato, rogato, gandato, sallato, agato, abadato, parato, palokato, sunyato, anattato, samanupassati. Now these are all vipassana approaches. Say you are in the first jhana, but now you consider the impermanent nature of the first jhana. Anicchato, the suffering nature of the first jhana, the disease nature of the first jhana. Then the gandato, what you call kind of boil, kind of dart, sallato, agato, abadato, like a disease. Parato, it is like someone else's. Palokato, it is quite fragile. Sunyato, it is empty. Anattato, it is non-self. So all these are vipassana reflections. So while being there, you can't, do it. Rather, you have to be there for some time, and then you step back and then make this wise reflection. So that is why we typically say, while completely absorbed in the jhana, you are there, you are locked there. You can't do a radical reflection. In order to do the radical reflection, you need to step back. You need to come out of it. You need to maintain a distance. Then only you can do this reflection. Yeah.
Thank you, Sensei. The next question I'd like to invite San. You may unmute.
Thank you, Jennifer. Bhante, this question, I had this question for quite a while, but I think it's quite pertinent that I bring this up today because of the topic which was discussed. Which is the self-view. The question, when one achieves sotapanna state, it is said that sakkaya ditthi, vichikicca and silabata paramasa are relinquished or removed. And at that point, when you say sakkaya ditthi, the word itself can be roughly translated to kaya drushtiya, basically one's body view. So what I'm trying to ask is, what exactly is removed at the sotapanna state when we say sakkaya ditthi is removed? Because you can't completely remove the self view until one achieves the arhant state, because there's avijja still remaining up to that point. So this is basically the question I have, whether it is the body, the view of my body is what is removed at sotapanna state, or is it something beyond that, where even the self-view is tied with all the other things, such as I'm conscious as a person, I'm a tall person, I'm a short person, I'm a Sri Lankan, and so on, which makes our identity complete. I hope I have explained that question.
Yeah, actually, I think only to some extent, as you mentioned, these misunderstandings are removed, and only when one becomes an arahant that one is able to completely eradicate this thing. So basically, the sakkaya ditthi typically explained in the suttas as you know, pertaining to the body, then the feelings, perceptions, volitional formations, and the consciousness, each and everyone can be considered four ways. Say, this body is myself, this body belongs to me, or myself belongs to the body, or likewise, I mean, there are different ways that one may perceive the body. Similarly, the feelings, similarly, the perceptions, similarly, the formations, and similarly, the consciousness. So the most gross form, I think, one may remove. I'm just giving a single example, safe example. If one consider the body, say, typically we consider this body is I am. So, but when one does the elements meditation, so more and more one may recognize the element characteristics in the body. So, and that also quite impermanent. And therefore one has more understanding about the real nature of the body. It is not a single body. It is made out of the four elements, and they are also quite transient, has no permanent structure, no permanent nature. So likewise, all different ways, it is proven now you can't have a solid body. You can't have a permanent body. You can't have an everlasting body. So likewise, the typical, say, permanent kind of bounded structure of the body is broken. Now everything very much like broken into pieces. And you can't have the boundary about the body. And at that time, very much like, so the single body has become a particle body. And everything has collapsed. You can't create a solid body. Now within such kind of a situation, where am I attributing as myself? So the more gross kind of a belief, thinking that this body is a permanent entity, lasting some time, and it's a single thing, it belongs to me. So that kind of very gross level of misunderstanding may be eliminated. So we can argue the same way related to the feelings, to the perceptions, to the formations, and the consciousness. So more and more one may understand each and every aggregate as a kind of, not as a solid thing, but as something impermanent, but as something arising and passing away and conditioned. And when that sort of an understanding is available, that may be helping to abandon the self-view. But as you mentioned, still one may go wrong. That's an interesting point. So temporarily he is out of these wrong perceptions. As a result of that, maybe he is released. But still, mind may still try to do these wrong perceptions. So again and again, he has to train his mind, don't do it, not to do it. So there's a very interestingly mentioned in the Mula Pariyaya Sutta. So for a seeker, for a trainee, so he is trying to mention pataving patavito abhinyaya pataving ma manyi. Knowing that the earth element as earth element, the hardness as hardness, he is trying to train the mind not to think a self out of it. Ma manyi. So don't do it. Don't wrongly misunderstand it. You have seen it already. Now don't do the same mistake again. It's very much like training the mind. So that indicates, even though the self-view is abandoned, the gross view is abandoned, still the existing kind of an influence is maybe available. But the sotapanna, the trainee, is trying to reflect that he already understood it. Didn't you do it? Didn't you understand that during the practice? So don't do the foolish thing again. So likewise, he's trying to very much like train the mind. Because he hasn't completely, fully comprehend the whole thing, but a kind of a glimpse of understanding has arisen when he become a sotapanna. But still, mind may be doing the same mistake time to time. So he is trying to train him, train the mind, trying to convince the mind, trying to enlighten the mind, awaken the mind to the reality. So therefore, as you have mentioned, so till one become an arahant, so this self-making, I-making may be happening. So we have to admit it, we need to recognize it, and try to abandon it, not to affirm it, not to feed it, not to fertilize it. So that is why actually now you can remember when Visakha has lost her niece, she came crying towards the Buddha because she considers, so she is my niece. She has passed away. It's a great loss to me. Now, everywhere the self-view. Niece is a person, I am a person, so I lost my niece. So this is taking the typical conventional terms too strongly. Then with the teaching of the Buddha, advice of the Buddha, now again Visakha was able to arouse wisdom. Now she was able to stop crying. So therefore, as far as the evidences are telling us, so Sotapanna may not be a perfect person which is completely out of the self-view, but might have seen the reality, but not yet fully. Time to time he may go through certain delusions, but quickly he can abandon them. Quickly he can consolidate his understanding. Yeah.
Yes, Bhante, you kind of answered my question partly by giving the explanation to the previous speaker. However, what I wanted to ask you on that particular topic was that you spoke about the gross acquired self and then the mind-made acquired self and formless acquired self. So what my understanding is that the Sotapanna loses the concept or has some understanding about the gross acquired self, but not the mind-made acquired self and the formless acquired self. Would that be right?
Yeah, that is also a very interesting answer. Yeah, I can agree with you because, Buddha explained it in that way also through the fetters, 10 fetters. So the yes. first 5 fetters are the ones binding us towards the sensual realm. Yes. So if one is able to completely abandon the 5 fetters, so that means we may not be reborn in the sensual realm. But still, the higher realms are still, our defilements help to be reborn. When one has abandoned all the higher fetters, another 5 fetters, then only one may be not reborn into the arupa and the rupa realms. So as you mentioned, so therefore we can say when one become an anagami, then only one is able to abandon all the kind of desires, tanha, craving, etc., pertaining to the sensual realm is abandoned.
Yes. So actually, the Sotapanna has the
ruparaga
and
aruparaga. Yes. And not only that, even the kamachanda vyapada is available for Sotapanna.
Yeah. So it's the very, very early stages only that, as you very nicely explained to the previous speaker, that this person is able to understand and experience it in the deep meditation, but when he or she comes out of it, he can revert to Sahaipa to a lesser extent than an otherwise not at the same level person. That's correct, isn't it?
Yeah, we can, because understanding was there profoundly at a given time when you were practicing.
Yes.
But
yes.
Because of the power of the defilements, probably again you might get deluded.
Yes.
But at that time, you are not permanently deluded because that previous insight may help us to come out of that delusion.
Yeah. So that's a good answer, Bhakti. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the other part that I just wanted to touch on, you did touch on it, but I just wanted to expand it. You spoke about the summit of acceptance, and you said at that stage you abandon poison and the present perception that the person is experiencing. Can you just expand a little bit more in simple terms, please?
No, that is there now. Say in some of the practice, it's more kind of a, say, satisfaction-based and a kind of a blissful states that we are, say, experiencing. And one may probably even addicted to that. I mean, this is a strong term I am using. I mean, one may further and further refining one's perception, and one experience more and more sublime states, subtle states. So one may like to be there. One may like to dwell there. Without making this kind of a radical reflection. So whenever you are decided, whenever you want to whenever you want to see the disadvantages of this whole process, whole preparations, whole constructions, you need to altogether stop it. So this is a strong kind of a reflection that you are doing. I mean, so far what you did was, you understood the disadvantages of the existing state. Therefore, you want to become to a new state, which is more refined and more subtle and more advanced. So the gross perception is abandoned. New subtle perception is arisen. But now you are doing that for some time. As a result of that, now very much like you are fed up with it. You understood even the the meaningless activity that we were doing. We were abandoning a gross state, but acquiring ourselves, putting ourselves back onto a new state, new perception. So how about completely abandon all the perceptions, not to make any intention? Because making an intention is a suffering. Sabbe sankhara dukkha. Making an intention, making a volitional thinking, trying to do something is suffering. As a result of that, so once you are there, you do recognize this disadvantages of the present state, and also understand the futile activity that you are doing by arousing or trying to cling towards a new state. That clinging towards a new state, that becoming process, bhavatanha, now you are going to abandon. I don't want to become a new person. I don't want to be with a new perception. Let me completely free from everything. So there's a kind of a radical reflection one may do. So as a result of that, the existing perception start to fade away because you are not supporting it. And there is no new state for you to hook up, to hold on, to cling to, because you don't have a desire for a new state. As a result of that, mind stops. As a result of that, the one may experience a cessation, the nirodha.
So
in
that nirodha state, is the mind kind of blank?
That's the question that you need to ask. So what should be there? That's the point. So that is why, so Buddha explained it in different manner. It can't have any sign. So therefore it is signless. It can't have any desire. Therefore it should be desireless. It can't have anything, any substantial thing. Therefore it should be empty. Sunyata. So either way, whenever you are accomplishing signless, actually you have the properties, characteristics of the other two. So it is the most kind of the approach that one is taking. So whenever mind becomes signless, so that indicates you are not holding any permanent thing. Because whenever you have the permanent notion, nitya sanya, that indicates you have some kind of a sign. But when the signs are completely abandoned, the mind becomes signless. Mind is empty. Mind has no perception. Mind has no sign. no mark. So mind is very much like blank.
So these things are all, what I'm understanding is that when one goes into the dhyanic state, only then when you come out of this, that you can actually, when one is meditating and going into a fairly good concentration, it is very pleasant, as you said, and when one comes out of it, only that one is, should be contemplating on this.
Yes.
That you are,
yes.
I don't know, somebody that first question, I didn't quite agree because there are a lot of sutras that you are reading, the Buddha is all the time talking about the jhana.
Yeah, he is talking about the jhana and also talking about how to recognize the disadvantages of jhana and to make a radical reflection about them, and as a result of that, leading towards the cessation. Yeah.
And even the Anapanasati yoga, that by saying that, and even the four foundations of mindfulness, he's talking about it. So the other thing you said about that you gave some names about the sutras, you said Sattakanagara Sutta, is that right?
Yeah, I'll put it into the chat. So Attakanagara Sutta. Attakanagara Sutta. So this is another one is called Attakanagara. Nagara is a city. Attaka means eight.
Eight,
yes, yes. So here Venerable Ananda is giving a answer, telling that there are eight ways to achieve the freedom, eight ways to achieve this kind of, now in other terms, if I am joining this with the Pottapada Sutta, there are eight summits of perceptions through which you can touch the cessation. And then another one is called Dutiya Puggala Sutta. Puggala Sutta. So this is in the Anguttara Nikaya. Anguttara Nikaya. So if I put the Sinhala one, let me put the Sinhala link. So this is where actually Buddha say after achieving the first jhana, for example, so there is some sort of a perception into that first jhana. There is some sort of a bodily formations available in that time. There is a kind of a feelings available in at that time. There are various formations going on. So that very aggregates Buddha mentioned, one is recognizing as impermanent, recognizing as unsatisfactory, recognizing as kind of a boil, kind of a, likewise, I mean, all the different approaches, vipassana approaches Buddha has mentioned, anicchato, dukkato, rogato, gandato, sallato, agato, abadato, parato, palokato, sunyato, anattato. Now, all these are different ways of looking at these different phenomena, more in a vipassana angle, so that you are able to abandon this state. You understand the disadvantages of these forms, these feelings, these perceptions, and as a result of that, you may ultimately touch the cessation.
Yeah, yeah. So,
yes.
Because what I'm trying to say, sometimes we like to apply it on a practical basis also, you know, when we are just walking or whatever. Get all those
reflections
easily when we are in the real world.
No, we can't say so, because in the jhana, of course, you may need to have a more firm posture and to be in there. But on the other hand, when one is involved in the vipassana, say you are practicing Chitta Anupassana, for example. So you are constantly observing the mind. So various thoughts are coming to the mind, and you are observing a particular thought. And to this thought, when you recognize how quickly it passed away, how it quickly disappeared, then you understand the very impermanent nature of the thought. That is the sankhara khanda. Sankhara khanda. So therefore, you are not in the jhana, but you are in the vipassana. So we need to understand now the suttas I have given here are where jhana being reflected, jhana being put under the scrutiny of vipassana. But there are other methods. Yeah, from the beginning, you are understanding the disadvantages, the consequences, the drawbacks of various phenomena. So from the beginning, you are developing that perception. From the beginning, the vipassana approach is applied.
Okay, next time we like to have some vipassana sutta,
We'll take one. Yes. Correct.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Hi, Bhante. There's a quick question about the Saturday program. Can you confirm the time? Because when the participant logged in at 7 a.m. Sri Lanka time, I believe the class had already started.
Yeah. So actually, sorry about the last time, because on last Saturday, our Sangha Uposatha was put on. So as a result of that, I have to attend that at 7:30. So therefore, I have adjusted the time to 6:30 for the Saturday program, that monthly program. But this Ms. Shalika is preparing, organizing. So that is why we have shifted the program to 6:30 Sri Lanka time. But from next time onwards, actually we may conduct it on the 7 a.m. Sri Lanka time.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
And may the participant reach out to Sarita to get any updates to schedule adjustments?
Actually, Shalika has sent an email telling the adjustment of the time. Probably this person haven't received it. Okay, yeah.
So the last question is from Steve.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful sutra, and you explained it so very clearly, and especially with questions and answer time, the answers are so very, very good that I, realized about at that time. And what I felt was that, I think my way of bhavana, I want to find out about bhavana. It's more like a 24-hour thing that I do because I'm aware of what's happening around me. And and then what happens is that when you're aware of the afterbirth and the kind of the aspects of life, jati, jara, vyadi, marana, and then you realize the elements, the changing nature of it, and therefore I think you lose, you can't give value to anything as it is first, right? Like when you realize the, five aggregates are suffering, and also like you mentioned the sutras, like the Sila Sutra, talks of anicca, dukkha, and yoga, etc., up to anattato. So when you sort of look at all of this, and then when you can't value to anything. I think you let go of it, like charter, and then you can sort of, to a certain degree, disconnect with the body and the feelings and the sankhara as well. And then you can't give value to that. Then it's easy to let go, and also you realize all the tittis. Like this sutra really covers even what Sattva Sutra talks of all the tittis. I felt it was really lovely. And also I felt that one can't give any value to the rupa or the arupa world also, because they are also impermanent. And then you realize that there's nothing but nirvana if you want peace and freedom to get out of samsara. And now my question to you, Pandevi, is, like when you sit down formally to meditate, because one has been looking at things throughout the day, I suppose, if the mind is sort of blank, do you remain in that blankness, so that you're focusing on the blankness, that space, or do you have to contemplate on things? This is where I'm not really sure what I should do from now on.
Yeah. So basically, if the mind is not holding anything, not grasping anything, not cling on to anything, if the mind is fairly blank and there is no stress at all, and there's a kind of a pleasant abiding and no tension, so then you just have to be there. Because if we are doing something, then we are back on the preparing of formations. Again, we are doing something. But we are, if the mind is completely relinquish everything, doesn't want to have any burden, doesn't want to associate anything, doesn't want to hold on to any perception, any mark, sign, that's why it is empty. Mind is blank. And then, I mean, we have nothing to do. So mind is in a perfect situation. So we need to maintain that. So that's a very interesting point Buddha highlights. Vimuttatta titan titatta santusitan santusitatta na paritasati. So mind had stopped. Mind does not waver. Mind does not go this, I mean, grasp this and that. So basically mind has come to a kind of a standstill. At that time, titatta santusitan. So now the mind has to have kind of a gladness. Santusitatta na paritasati. As a result of that, there is no agitation. Now typically what happens is, even though mind is blank, even though mind has some sort of non-grasping nature, still there could be a little agitation. I want to do something. There could be something more. Is it correct? What else I need to do? Or we can't simply maintain that calm, peaceful state, but there's a kind of an inner urging coming, inner agitation coming. So that agitation also has to be abandoned. So that very, very kind of a urgency coming has to be abandoned. So sometimes Buddha mentioned it has sort of a passaddhi we need to have. So once things are settled, once things are calm, peaceful, no grasping at all, no tension, so just maintain it. Try to maintain that mind more quietly, more peacefully. Try to enjoy the inner silence. So how about enjoying inner silence? So you can't enjoy inner silence until you are not appreciating the inner silence. Until you are very much be satisfied there. Till you are asking something more, you can't have kind of an appreciation. So when you don't want anything more, when you have completely abandoned the bhavatanha, then only you can be fully satisfied, fully contented. So therefore, once you reach this non-grasping state, we need to reflect in that line. I should not make any more kind of agitations or any constructions. Rather, I need to simply be here quietly, peacefully, enjoying the present moment, enjoying the inner silence. Yeah. Okay, I think we need to wind up the session. Jennifer, can you wind up the session?
All the questions for tonight. Thank you very much.
So, can you do the sharing of merits?
Oh, I'm not prepared.
Okay, okay. Okay then. My throat has a problem. Okay then. So then next. Yeah, I'm drinking some hot water. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay then. Then we'll wind up the session. Actually, we have spent almost 2 hours. All the acquired merits we'll share with all the beings, all the celestial beings, all the past relatives, and we'll recite the traditional verses. Ettavatacham hehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavatacham hehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavatacham hehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Akasattha bummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkhantu sasanam. Akasattha bummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkhantu desanam. Akasattha bummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkhantu mamparam. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.